Coming up, are these jobs being eliminated? And then remote job listings that aren't remote. And then what do managers need to do to stay in their roles? Plus, we're going to coach you up. Let's go. All right, folks, welcome to the Ken Coleman Show, where we coach you up to get the competitive edge. Because you are in a competition. That edge is going to allow you to make more money and make more impact in your work. Now we're talking true fulfillment. This idea of happiness in our work is achieved when we are making great money and making tremendous impact. Because we're doing what we were created to do. People look at us and go, you were born for this. So that's why we're here. And let's talk about some jobs, some roles that I think are in danger. And I am not being sensational. We're going to dive into this. We're going to break this down extensively here as we start the show. Why? Because the positions that are in danger are middle managers or managers in larger organizations. And so why is that so relevant? Because this entire show is about your professional growth. And so here's what I can guarantee you. If you are growing professionally, you will be promoted into a position of authority. And we get this call. We get this email. We get this question on social media all the time. Ken, how do I know that I can lead effectively when I haven't led before? Well, this is a very natural, organic reality, and it's the right question. Because here's the deal. If you come in and you win, here's what I know about the culture in America. I can only speak to the American work culture. But I would presume this is true around the world. That leaders, when they see somebody performing well, so let's just, Ken gets a job and I come in and I'm selling tires. Let's just pick, this is the most random thing that popped in my mind. Because you can take one look at me and know I know nothing about tires. Let's say I'm selling tires. I come in and I do a good job. And I do a good job long enough to where leadership starts to realize, well, Ken is a top performer. He's selling more tires than everybody else. He's really great with the customer, well-liked among the team. And Ken's asking about a raise, and we'd like to keep Ken around, and we do want to reward him. He's doing good things for us. You know what they do? They say, hey, Ken, how would you like to be the morning shift manager? Well, I didn't necessarily say anything about being a manager. I've never managed. I've never led anybody before in my life in this story, right? This is what we do. And here's where this could be really tricky. And I'm going to unpack more of this in our next segment, but I'm going to tease this part. Has it occurred to you, leaders, that you, in your desire to reward somebody, might promote them into a place of inefficiency? Well, they're great at sales. Doesn't mean they'll be great at leading people. Can you teach leadership? Yes. More on that next segment. All right. So, Business Insider, which is, they're just like every other magazine or online outlet. They say things to be sensational, and this got my attention. So here it is. They recently said, what would happen if companies completely got rid of middle managers? Well, first of all, that's sensational. But buried inside of that sensational question designed to provoke your eyeballs is a legitimate issue. So we're gonna break into this because Business Insider, the person who wrote the article, said it's time to get rid of them, all of them. Okay. A leaderless outfit is called chaos. But let's look at the data. Managers who make up 17.6% of the U.S. workforce are paid large salaries to act as a type of workplace hall monitor. This is true. Keeping an authoritative eye on everyone else. But as more employees shift to working from home, the need for this management oversight has massively decreased. Let me edit that statement because, again, I think they are on to something, but I think they are being sensational. Here's how I would edit that last sentence. The need for this management oversight has massively decreased. I'll edit that. The need for a new management style has massively increased. And this is what I want to focus on. So here we are, post-pandemic. Hybrid work is everywhere. If you're new to this phrase, very simple. It means you spend some time working remote, whether that's in your home or your neighborhood coffee shop, and you some time in the office. There are still companies that are fine with 100% remote. But the hybrid model is quickly gaining steam because a lot of leaders are saying we want people to come back in. Well, the reality is we all know this. We as human beings are tremendous at adapting. And during the pandemic, when we all went home for a while, I say we all, it's my badge of honor. I didn't miss a day. We came in and did our show live with a skeleton staff. No need to send me any kind of medals. Just wanted to point it out. But most people went home exclusively for a season. And here's what we learned. Due to technology and responsible, high-character women and men, then people did their job and did a good job. So the idea of the manager seeing you every day or seeing you in the hallway, and I'm not making a statement here, I'm just pointing out facts, it wasn't as necessary as it had previously been. This is a fact. I didn't say that I'm pro-remote work or anti-hybrid. I'm not making a statement. I'm just pointing out that for a season, companies had to be productive and efficient, and they were. So, the return to work is creating a lot of tension, and it is a bit of a storm. And where I think Business Insider is in on this is there is a trend for some companies to go, you know what, look, we've paid this person largely to be a hall monitor. And when we went to the remote work, we realized we didn't need them to interact the way that they used to interact. And now people coming back into the office, they don't need all this minding of the store. And I've called this nannyship, not leadership. So this is the setup, the problem. So leaders, those of you who work for leaders and you're not happy with it, let me break this down. There does need to be a course correction in the style of managing or leadership. And I believe it needs to go from manager to coach. And let me break down the difference. I think there's three distinct differences between a manager and a coach. Watch. Number one, the manager monitors people. I remember we had three kids under the age of three. We would go to our next door neighbors, Alex, to have a cocktail every once in a while because quite frankly, we needed one. And we had monitors in all the kids' rooms and I had my little remote control. We could see what was going on. People don't need that. They don't need their manager spying on them. So the manager monitors, the coach observes. The coach sits back and observes. How are they doing that fundamental play there? Are they running their play the right way? They're observing and then instructing. The manager criticizes, the coach encourages. See, the coach goes, hey, you didn't get that right, it's okay. Because a coach realizes the person's disappointed when they make a mistake. Anyway, they go, hey, it's all right, kid. Here's how you do it. And they smack him on the back. Or back in my day, you got a smack on the rear end. Get back in there, Coleman, you're fine. Get your head up. Next play. That's a coach. That's encouragement. Finally, the manager controls, the coach instructs. See, the manager's trying to steer you and coach you. I mean, excuse me, the manager's trying to steer you and like hold on to everything. And the coach goes, hey, I told you how to do it. I believe you can do it. Now go do it. Here's the deal. People want to be trusted, not tracked. Oh, that's good. Somebody should write that down. More on this manager issue next. Coaching you up to have the competitive edge. This is the Ken Coleman Show. Hey, let me remind you. We got new people. We're having record months and all these new people joining the show. Let me just tell you that I don't say what I say to open up the show every day just to come up with something cool to say because I think I'm cool. Because I got three teenagers. Let me tell you what I'm aware of. I'm not cool. I am under no illusion that I resemble anything wildly close to cool because my kids roll their eyes at me like, I can just walk out of the room and not say anything, Alex, and my very existence creates an eye roll. You've been there. Teenagers, God bless them. The cure to pride and arrogance is a teenager. Because if you're arrogant and you think you're something special, just parent a teen, and they'll put you in your place very quickly. But the reason I talk about competition is because you are in a competition against the you of yesterday. Watch this. It's very important. You are in competition against the you of yesterday. I don't want you in comparison. Comparison's a cancer. It'll kill you. It'll turn you into a groveling, sniveling mess. But competing against the you of yesterday is going to create tremendous maturity and grit and growth. I promise you that. And then let's be very clear. We live in a soft society. I mean, I'm a child of the 80s where you didn't get a participation ribbon when I played sports growing up. The only people who got trophies were the people who won. I don't know what's happened to us. Well, we don't want the kids' feelings to be hurt. I do. I remember when this insidious movement happened. It was early 90s, 1992. I'm a freshman at Liberty University. This is a rant, by the way, in case anybody hasn't figured it out. I'm going somewhere with this. 1992. And I'm working at the YMCA trying to make a little extra money so I could take a couple ladies out every once in a while, right? And so I go to the YMCA and I sign up to be a soccer coach, played soccer my whole life, know the game, love coaching. And so I get that nobody wanted to coach the 5 and 6 years, 5 and 6 year olds. So the leader of the community said to me, he said, "Hey, Ken, are you willing to coach the little ones, the kindergarten, first graders?" I said, "Yeah, I'll coach." And they're not a great group to coach because it's just this. It's like gang ball. They just all follow the ball. So, I mean, it's really not soccer. But I thought, you know what? I'm up for a challenge. And so I took that. So one of the things they told us in the coaches meeting, I'll never forget. I show up on a night, Alex, and we're sitting down with all the coaches. And the guy goes, "All right, guys, gals, thanks for coaching. Appreciate you, blah, blah, blah. Listen, we don't have a lot of rules, but here's the deal. This is youth soccer. And one of the things we just decided to do, this is 1992. One of the things we've decided to do is we're not going to keep score this year for these little ones." And I'm like, "I'm sorry?" I mean, you know, Alex, my body language was just going, you know. And I started raising my hand. I said, "Hey, can you explain why?" Because he just rolled right through that. "Well, listen, we just want them to start to fall in love with the game, want them to learn the game. All this stuff about the game, and we don't want to feel there." And I'm going, "How is it a game if we don't have score? Have you ever played a game where somebody didn't win? It's ludicrous. It's nuts." So you know what I did, folks? First game, we lost. Got drubbed. 5-6-0, I think it was. So I get down on my knees. I got these little kids around me, you know. And I'm like, "Listen, guys, really proud of you. Coach is really proud of you. Hey, we lost today. We lost 6-0. I told them, you know, and they received it like normal human beings. They were like this. A couple of them were looking at the sky. One kid had his finger in his nose. Two or three of them looking at me, and they're kind of like, "Oh, man, we lost. Hey, but I'm proud of you, and we're going to get better, and we're going to win next week, and we're going to keep playing hard until we win." Why? Why does it matter? Because people need to understand that you are in a competition the rest of your freaking life. Competing against the you of yesterday and competing against coworkers who are after the same promotion you are doesn't mean it has to be ugly or backbiting or gossipy, but it's just real. And you're competing against people from the outside who are wanting to come in and get that promotion. So your best life includes you beating the competition. All right. There's my rant. Now, I want to stay on this issue of managers because this is all tied into if I'm going to get promoted, which is stage 5 of the 7 stages that I wrote about in From Paycheck to Purpose. Stage 1 is get clear on what it is I want to do or the mountain I want to climb. Stage 2 is I got to get qualified to climb. Stage 3 is I get connected for opportunities to come to me and knock on my door. Eventually, I take one of them. That's stage 4, get started. Now, once I've started, I'm on the ladder, and now stage 5 is I am climbing the ladder. There is no success without progress, and with progress, I am going to be promoted, and many times, if not every time, I'm at some point going to get promoted into a place of influence, otherwise known as leadership. So, I want to stay on this. Harvard Business Review did an analysis on managers, and there was an average of 1 manager per 4.7 workers in America. I think that's preposterous. 1 manager for every 4.5 workers. Now, they point this out because the case is being made there's too many managers. Alex, I feel like out there in the land of people listening and watching, I'm hearing amens reverberate off the mountains when I said there's too many managers. Too many cooks in the kitchen. So one of the things they pointed out is a successful GE, General Electric plant, with 300 technicians and one single supervisor as this shining city on a hill of an example of, wait a second, there was a GE plant that had 300 techs doing manual labor, fixing stuff, building stuff, whatever you want to call it, and they had one supervisor. They talk about a Swedish bank with 12,000 workers and only three levels of hierarchy. Now, I want that, let that sink in for a second. 12,000 employees and only three levels of leadership. It's phenomenal. Why do I point this out? Because in the United States, due to the way we're wired as Americans, I love America. Get your feelings hurt. We've got this reward system that I touched on in the first segment, which is you do well at this job. Oh, I'm going to promote you up. And guess what happens many times? Watch this progression. So let's take Linda. And Linda is a great project manager. Why is Linda a great project manager? Well, Linda is very organized. Linda is very self-driven, self-starter. Linda loves communicating with people to the extent that she likes to be the spoke of the wheel, if you will. And Linda's happiest when Linda is presented with a problem that she and several other people have to partner together to solve. Okay? But Linda likes the service side of the role, and she doesn't want to be the decision maker. She wants to be a servant, and she wants to facilitate help and support. Does not want to be the lead dog. Why? Well, she prefers to support decisions, not make decisions. And so Linda does a great job. She's the best project manager in the building. So what do we do in American leadership? Linda's amazing. Let's promote Linda. Well, Linda, just like every other person on the planet, gets flattered when they come to her and they say, Linda, we want to promote you. Linda, just like every other human being on the planet, finds out that they're going to give her a nice pay raise. So Linda goes, I feel good. This raise is good. It's a no-brainer. I've got to do it. But there's a still small voice inside of Linda that goes, you've never wanted to lead. You just like being in a support role. You don't want to lead. There's some stuff about that that makes you uncomfortable. It's not playing to your strengths, Linda. But what does Linda do? She's going to say no to a promotion, to a bigger paycheck? So what happens? Let's fast forward. They put Linda in the role. She gets in. She's not in her sweet spot. Not only does it not allow her to use her talents to her best ability, but it drains her emotionally. All of a sudden, Linda's not such a good manager. And we took Linda and took her from a rock star role into a mediocre role. Leaders think this stuff through. People don't need nannies. This is the Ken Coleman Show. All right, folks, welcome back to the Ken Coleman Show, where we coach you up to have the competitive edge to make more money and more impact. And I am nothing if I am not a man of the people. I care about you folks. I want to inform you. I want to inspire you. And a couple stories here that just make me shake my head. One really, really irritates me. And this is just a warning. I'm about ready to stand up for you, the people. Let's do it in the news. All right, so I bang on horrible bossery and horrible leadership when necessary on this program, and I can't even believe what I'm about to read. Headline from Slate.com, the mystery of remote job listings that aren't actually remote? What? Amid the boom in remote working spurred by pandemic closures 2 years ago, job seekers are encountering a frustrating phenomenon. It's not funny. It's not funny. I don't know why I'm laughing. It's so absurd. Jobs advertise as remote when they really aren't. It's become quite common for candidates to see a job posting for a role that claims to be remote. Apply, confirm in the first contact that they're looking for 100% remote work, go through several rounds of interviews, only to find out late in the process that the employer actually wants them to come in for 1 or 2 days a week or even more. So it's like, it's kind of remote. This is an absolute real testimony I'm about to read. I'm now in talks with an exciting company that sells a service that is entirely up my alley. The role seems exciting. When the internal recruiter contacted me, the first thing I said was, it sounds great, but is it remote? Otherwise, it's not what I'm looking for. She checked internally and told me that it was possible to work entirely remotely. Oh, okay, great. Now I'm about to have my third interview, and the company has hinted that I'd need to be in the office twice a week. I can't see why they would have gone ahead with my application knowing this. A few weeks ago, I applied for a job that was advertised as remote. I happen to live close to the company's headquarters, but I'm not interested in jobs that require me to commute. During my interview, I asked a logistical question. In response, the employer told me they would expect me to work from the office 2 to 3 days a week, and they posted the job as remote so they could have a bigger pool of applicants. So there it is. They just straight out said, well, we lied to get people to apply. And Julia Pollack, who is the chief economist at ZipRecruiter, told us this was happening. That anytime any job is listed as remote, it gets an insane amount of bites. And so these slimy recruiters and slimy leaders are lying to people. And I just don't understand what you think that people are going to think of you. You know what I equate it to, Alex? The guy who goes on those dating websites and like picks a picture that's not even him. It's some soap opera, heartthrob or whatever. Yeah, catfish. That's what they call it, the catfish. Yeah. And you meet the girl on the first date. What do you think she's going to do? It's false advertising. Plain and simple. I don't get it. I mean, you talk about not only are you going to lose a potentially good candidate, but then they're going to start talking about you. I just don't understand. All right, this is fun. On the lighter side of lying leaders, we go to things I didn't think about. One of the challenges that I didn't think about, because again, I wasn't a remote worker, but boy, oh boy, with three teenagers and a wife, I feel your pain on this story. The office thermostat. Apparently, the return to the office has created tension around the office thermostat. We've all been there wearing a winter jacket in the summer due to aggressive air conditioning. Now, let me just say, I have no problem calling out Dave Ramsey on this issue. I have never called him out publicly before. This may be the last time that I do it. It's freezing in this office. I mean, and I like to sleep cold. In fact, I'm the guy, this may be too much information for some of you, who sleeps with his feet outside of the sheet. I like my feet outside. I don't like any covers. Are you that way as well, Alex? Yeah. I need my feet to be cold. So I'm a cold sleeper. I like to be cold. It's so cold in here some days, I have to apologize to people when I shake hands. So here's the deal. Apparently, there is now a middle ground. Here it is. Wall Street Journal and the International Journal of Hygiene found that the optimal range for cognitive and work performance is 71.6 to 75.2. There it is. Let all arguments over the thermostat now be settled. Oh, yeah. Helping you folks get where you want to go and be who you were designed to be. This is the Ken Coleman Show. Hey, for the many of you who are thinking about changing jobs, you're probably confronting the anxiety around lonely hours in front of the computer, filling out all kinds of resumes and not hearing anything. ZipRecruiter gets that. They don't want you to feel alone or frustrated. Their artificial intelligence does a lot of the work for you. They save you time by sending you jobs that you can apply to with one click. And they're constantly pitching your profile to employers. And when employers go, hey, I'm interested, they get out of the way. They let you apply directly, and you stand out because you're with ZipRecruiter. It's free to you because companies pay for the service because they want Zip to send them talent. That's you. So it's free to you, ZipRecruiter.com/Ken. ZipRecruiter.com/Ken. I don't know why you wouldn't sign up as just another arrow in your quiver. Nidra is up next in Dallas, Texas. Nidra, you're on the Ken Coleman Show.
Hello. I am calling because I have a side business that is growing, and I've been able to fund it from my day job.
Nice.
So I started with the most recent company earlier this month, and on my first day, I realized that the person who had hired me had been promoted, and so that person is no longer going to be my manager, and I have someone new.
Oh.
And so what I'm looking at is how to remain hopeful in this situation, knowing that I need the money to fund my business, and just because when I first found out, I was in my head thinking, oh,
what
should I go
thinking?
Look for something else? My first thought was, should I go look for something else? I didn't know that this would happen.
Wait. So I understand that, but I think there was a deeper thought there that I want you to identify if you haven't already. There was another thought or feeling that caused you to think, oh, should I look somewhere else because I didn't expect this? There's something there. What was the fear when you found out that you had a new leader all of a sudden?
The fear was having to prove myself to someone that I wasn't mentally prepared to be my manager.
What makes you think you have to prove anything to them because they weren't in that leadership role either? They're coming in new. You were already hired. So they've inherited a team. Yes or no?
Yes.
Are they from the outside or inside?
Inside.
So they're from the inside. Were they on the team that you're on?
Yes.
Oh, so they were there when you got hired. They were on the team.
Yes.
So what makes you think you have to prove yourself to them other than the fact that you've already been hired and you've got a job and you're doing the job and you're going to do it well? What makes you think you have to prove anything?
Well, I will say that during the actual interview process, there were questions that I asked the previous hiring manager to make sure that based on what I was looking for, that she would be a really suitable fit. And so I didn't get the opportunity to ask, you know, the current person. And so I had a cringe moment of, I didn't get a chance to prepare and now this happens. And how do I know if I'm going to be okay?
Well, how long have you been in this position?
Literally 2 weeks.
Okay. And how long ago did the hiring manager change positions?
Right before I came, so maybe 2.5.
Oh, okay. So they hire you and that person leaves into a different role before you start.
Right.
Okay. And when you asked all these questions of the previous hiring manager, did you feel confident coming in based on her or his answers?
Okay. Oh yes. I was excited.
Okay, so has there been any conversation with that previous hiring manager?
Yes, we've talked about it twice, and she's actually said that that even if I were working for her, that I would still be trained by the person who is currently managing me.
Great.
And she said that yes, even though she's not my manager, that it is open door policy. Whatever I want to talk about, just to know that she is there, like is completely open door. They're not like typical companies where if you're of a certain title, you don't talk to people. Theirs is completely open door. They love having open, honest conversation. And I did share how when I heard that she was not going to be my manager, that I literally gasped 3 times.
What did she say
to that? Just, and she was like, oh my God. Like I could tell that she felt bad. And
but what did she say to reassure you about your new leader?
That she's someone who is extremely strong in what I do. She's someone who is well trained, and based on what she knows, they have the same working style, and so she does think that she'll be a really good match for me.
Great. And then let's shift gears. How do you feel about your ability to do the job now that you've been on for 2 weeks and you've received some training? How confident are you that you can do a really good job in your role?
I'm very confident.
All right, then. Nidra, what would have to be true for this new leader to come in the office one day and go, "Oh, I don't think Nidra's a good fit. We're moving on. I didn't hire her. She's out." Are you giggling? Nidra, why are you giggling at that question?
Oh, God. Because based on what I've gotten from her, I don't see her doing that.
Yeah.
Like, she totally seems like the sweetest, kindest person, extremely patient.
Oh, great.
And I'm very thankful for that.
Good. And so let's take that analysis, your words, not mine, and put it on top of the fact that you've been there 2 weeks and you are very confident that you're going to do a good job. So you are now worried about a monster that is under the bed that you know good and well is not under the bed. But I just looked under the bed and there's no monster, Nidra. So you called me today for some type of reassurance. Or maybe you just needed me to walk you through that. But you are going to have to do something really boneheaded and intentionally ridiculous for this to go south. And I don't see any scenario by which that happens. So you are in control of this, and you're in control of your future as it relates to your ability to do the job, your ability to get along with her, develop a relationship with her, get to know her, lead up with her, serve her, connect with her, build a relationship with her. That's all you got to do. And then come in and do a good job. Am I right?
Yes, that's it.
Is there anything else?
No, that's it. Thank you.
Are you confident now that you're going to be fine with this new leader? No more gasping is the question. Are you gasping?
No, I'm not gasping. She really is just the sweetest, kindest person. And
okay. So that's all you needed from me is to walk you through that. Okay. All right. Hey, listen. Final encouragement. Change is scary. And what happened to you was you got confronted with a change that you had no idea was happening, and it just threw you. And so you learn from this now. The next time change comes your way when you least expect it, you have got to be a big girl and step back from the situation. I'm teaching now our rest of our audience here, because Nidra, ain't nothing wrong with Nidra. She's just like the rest of us. An unexpected change it's like smacking you right in the face. Whoa, what just happened? And you're startled. And then you go from startled to scared. And what you have to do is you got to go, wait. Let me just back up from this situation a little bit. What am I really afraid of? And we need to identify that fear. And then we write it down or type it out, or speak it to somebody. You got to get the fear out of the head. William James is the father of modern psychology, and he once said, no matter how absurd something is, if it is repeated often enough, people will believe it. No matter how absurd something is, if I think it enough, I will believe it. I got to get it out of my head. And when I get it out of my head, I go, what must be true for this fear to actually come to pass? And then we will find out if our fear is protecting us or if it is holding us back. That's all we got to do, folks. Get it out and examine it. Thank you, Nidra, for the call. I'm very excited for you. The best is yet to be for the rest of you. You matter. You have what it takes. Press on.
Thanks for listening to The Ken Coleman Show. For more, you can find the show on demand wherever you listen to podcasts and watch the show on YouTube. You can also find Ken across all social media by following @KenColeman.
If you enjoy this podcast, you should check out other great podcasts from the Ramsey Network, like Ramsey Call of the Day.
Check out our new Ramsey Call of the Day podcast. It'll give you a quick hit of advice about life and money in under 10 minutes. Listen to the Ramsey Call of the Day, wherever you listen to podcasts.